Well, hi friends. Here we are. We are beginning with Esoteric Astrology 151A. We've been talking about the Pleiades and the seven Rishis, among other things. Here are the Indian names and the Western names for the Rishis. And of course, our task would be to link these seven Rishis with the seven stars of the Pleiades, the main ones. Maya is called here Good Nursing Mother, but also is said to be the most beautiful of the Pleiades. Taygete is having to do with the hind with the golden horns and also Mount Taygetus. Steropae and Asteropae are doubles, and they have the flashing face and the star face. Merope may be sparkling face, but she hid her face in shame because she married the mortal Sisyphus, who had also committed many crimes. Alcyone is the strong helper in the central star, and Electra, interestingly enough, is amber-colored, which suggests the fifth ray to me, and especially because she's connected with electricity. You can generate electricity from amber. Celeno married Poseidon, who is Neptune, possibly giving the connection to the sixth ray. I don't know what this black or dark means, unless it has to do with the outer plane, in which case it would be the seventh ray. Somehow connecting these will be our task. And here, let's just say we'll do this with Google and say the Pleiades. And looking at their names here are Pleione and Atlas, Alcyone the central star, Merope, who may have something to do with our Earth, a mortal, although it should be with the seven sacred planets that she is connected. But she's passing through an area here of veiling, part of a nebula, which and she was also the faintest of the stars, which made the veiling of her face allegorically correct. She could not be detected until later when the telescopes were more powerful, but of course they knew, the ancient initiates knew of her existence. Is she connected both with Saturn and the Earth through the principle of veiling? Here's Electra, color amber, holding herself aloof from the other Pleiades, not dancing, not celebrating, seemingly more serious in some way. Maya, the most beautiful of all, but also the good nursing mother. Celeno, who married Poseidon. And Asteropae, excuse me, Asteropae being a double. If we look at the fourth ray, the contrast between the two sides is most pronounced. Harmony and conflict are two opposites. Other rays that have ray names do not have opposites. Love and wisdom are not opposites. Will and power are not opposites. Nor is ceremonial magic and organization opposites. But harmony and conflict are opposites, and hence the dualities possibly. This would leave us with Taygete for the seventh ray, but more work has to be done on these particular rays to see. I've been trying to find out who married who in which of the Rishis of the seven sisters were the which of the Rishis were the husbands of the seven sisters, and perhaps that will give us an important hint. Well, in any case, one wants to be able to solve this particular problem. One has the sense that a particular Pleiad goes with a particular Rishi, such as perhaps Benet Nash or Al-Kaid, Ray 1, with Alcyone, Ray 1, and matching up the stars, perhaps a Mizar with Maya, Ray 2, perhaps Alioth of the Great Bear with Merope, Ray 3, perhaps Megrez with Asteropae and Steropae, Ray 4. That's just a speculation. Perhaps a Dubay with Electra, Ray 5, both powerful stars in each constellation. Perhaps Merak in the Great Bear with Soleno, Ray 6, possibly. This will require deep, deep confirmation. Perhaps Phegda with Taygete, perhaps. Some of them one can feel more reasonably confident about, such as Alcyone and Al-Kaid or Benetnash, two names for the same star in the Great Bear, Benetnash Al-Kaid. And maybe if Maya is the Ray 2 star, the most beautiful of all, and in a way the oldest, and the good nourishing mother, good nursing mother, possibly the whole motherhood idea there, connecting with the second ray, then Merak would be, I mean, then Mizar would be connected accordingly. Anyway, you see the possibilities of the correlation. That's the point. And maybe we can, I'll leave these in this document. Every time I run into these, well, there are a number of correspondences which just have to be made. Like, let's just say, which of the constellations of the one about whom naught may be said represent which chakras and what rays primarily do they transmit? For instance, the Betelgeuse is a blind for the entire constellation Orion. It transmits the second ray and represents a heart. So maybe Orion represents the heart as well. That kind of thing. And if Sirius is the loyal dog to Orion, then it has a strong sixth-ray nature. And if it's in the seven solar systems of which ours is one, then that solar system can well be a loyal solar plexus, so to speak. And if Polaris is a major star of direction, we know that it is in the tail of the little bear, Ursa Minor. And we know that directedness is something that comes to us through the Ajna Center. So we're making the analogy there. Maybe the Ajna Center is involved. If there are two points within the solar plexus of the human being, a higher and a lower point, can Sirius A and Sirius B be the correspondences of those two points within the general and larger solar plexus center, including our sun and other neighboring stars? Those are the questions, and, not really soluble at this time, unfortunately, but soluble by someone at some time. At least if we have the question, we may possibly invoke the answer. Going on here in the Secret Doctrine and Cosmic Fire, because that's where we are, we're in the appendix to the book. We've gone through what Master DK has written about this book, in this book, and now we're gathering other references. Energy in the universe can be differentiated as follows. I think this is very interesting. Intercosmic affecting constellations. And, you know, from another point of view, intergalactic affecting the relations between galaxies. As we now understand galaxies to be. So, but intercosmic affecting constellations, what is the interplay between the three intimate constellations? What is the interplay between the various signs of the zodiac, such as the polar opposites? Interplanetary affecting planets, you know, how does Venus and Earth, or how do Venus and Earth interplay, for instance. Interchain, affecting the chains. Now, I don't know why he called, well, maybe a planetary cycle. Maybe the planet endures for a certain length of time. I'm going to go over here and get a good picture of a chain, the best we've got anyway. Yeah, there. I mean, you know, interchain. This is the Earth scheme, and between these chains we see various lines of connection, so that is also a possible method of interplay. Interglobular or globular, producing interchanges of force between globes, the globes of a chain, and we go right back here even to the Earth chain, and we see that there's been a particular connection here in the Venus chain between the Mercury globe and presumably the Venus globe, and here an important connection in the Earth chain between the Venus globe and the Earth globe. So these are globe lords. They are great entities. And if you, you know, it is often thought that a globe simply has one type of matter. But that is not very likely, because you couldn't have a lord of a globe without a monad and without a triad and without the higher aspects of the energy system. So to me, every globe is a multi-level being, the embodiment of a globe lord, who is less than a chain lord, who is less than, of course, a scheme lord, and the scheme lord is the logos of our entire planetary scheme. Intersectional, affecting the transference of force between kingdoms of nature. Well, what happened? What happened when animal man became human? That was an intersectional change. But we have to also remember that the kingdoms of nature are trans-systemic. No, that's interplay, yeah. The kingdoms of nature are trans-systemic, found throughout the solar system. So they're not just confined to our particular planet. We have man on Venus. We have man of a kind on Mercury. We have the beings in all their different kingdoms, even if not in an outward sense, we have them inwardly present. And certainly, we are told of the humanity on Vulcan and their progress, and the humanity on Earth and the humanity on Venus. There's a triangle there, and Venus has the most advanced humanity, Vulcan more advanced, and Earth within that triangle less advanced. And interhuman interplay between human beings, that's fairly clear, and interatomic. Some levels may have been passed here, of course. The possibility, you know, of intercellular and interorganic and interchakric and so forth within the human being have not been mentioned, but maybe the seven major types of interplay have been mentioned. This is in a section of a treatise on cosmic fire which I have not yet been able to comment upon, or at least say offer suggestions in relation to. The commentary obviously is always going to be less than the original, but at least ways of gaining different perspectives upon the commentary may be available. That's the point. All right, so very interesting about intersectional, interglobular, interchain, interplanetary, intercosmic, and, you know, I'm adding intergalactic and things of that nature. Obviously, it can keep going. You know, what is the relationship? There must be. What is the relationship between our Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxy? There must be. They are neighboring galaxies, and they have, I think, a male-female, or at least in different incarnations, a male-female kind of interplay. And that's very interesting to consider, that the galaxies themselves may have different incarnations in which we are all swept along, just as the solar logoi do, and maybe certain constellational groupings with lords of constellations having different incarnations through various stars. Very interesting, and expands the whole picture to an unmanageable degree. Mentally unmanageable. You know, we're in boggledom here. The mind will be boggled, but we can keep some clear lines of delineation, perhaps, that give us a sense of the astrological relationships between the very small, what we are here, and the very large, the galactic level. There must also be borne in mind the play of energy which emanates from any one of the 12 constellations or signs of the zodiac with which astrology concerns itself. This type of force is primarily concerned with planetary stimulation, with planetary logoi, and is hidden in their cyclic karma. The karma of the planetary logoi and the way they relate, therefore, to the zodiacal lords, a karma which will incidentally involve those monads and devas which form the bodies of their centers. So DK is saying that we are all involved as monads in planetary karma, the karma of the sacred planet in which we originated after coming from the sun, which was not, after all, either our final source. I just want to SACPT and SACPT, SACPT, and PTL. So sacred planet, okay, because I'm always doing that. All right. a karma which incidentally will involve, so, you know, we are presently monads of the Earth, but that, since the Earth is not a sacred planet, it cannot have been our planet of origin. Maybe monads from Mars find themselves doing time on Pluto, maybe because it's an alter ego situation. Monads of Venus, perhaps, on the Earth on occasion. It's like to go to a non-sacred planet is a bit like going into exile for a while, but eventually, as the principles of the non-sacred planet are absorbed, of course, Earth will become a sacred planet, but this does not necessarily mean that it is one of the original seven. It will become a sacred planet, what, on its own soul ray? Because in a way, the fifth initiation is taken on a combination, in terms of human beings, on their soul ray and monadic ray. That soul ray lasts a long time until, I would say, still effective at the fifth initiation, which is on the atmic plane. So then we'd have quite a strong relationship to Jupiter with its second-ray soul. Still, we would not have been one of the originating seven, and I suppose if the monad is that which finds its home within the sun, we're all monads, and in a sense, we must all find our home within the sun, we would be emanated out to different sacred planets, and then, depending on our fate and our monadic background, maybe to non-sacred planets such as the Earth. Probably each one of us has an origin in a particular sacred planet. Now, one of the things that's surprising to me is to say that the 12 constellations primarily concern themselves with the planetary stimulation. I would think, and I just, you know, I'm putting it up as a question, what about the stimulation of a solar system by the 12 constellations, or by any one of the 12 constellations? I mean, for instance, what about the constellation Leo and the stimulation which it might give to that lesser lord, called Sol, Helios, our sun, or to Sirius? There's a strong connection there. Why only to the planets of our solar system? I would think the stars will have a connection. Probably of the seven solar systems of which ours is one, considering them in a non-constellational sense, considering them just as primarily single stars, each one of them would rule, in a way, a different constellation of the zodiac. And probably, you know, there are five lesser stars in our seven solar systems, of which ours is one, which correspond to our five non-sacred planets. This would be my guess. But, it may be that there is a particular, ruling these suns as rulers. Now, which one, if our sun is related to Leo, what zodiacal constellation, which would be the zodiacal constellation of which Sirius was the ruler, of which Alpha Centauri was the ruler, and so forth. We had originally nine planets, I guess you could say, and going out to Saturn. How many, what could we, how could we number these? We could say, these are conventional planets. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Sun, and Moon. So that makes eight, which are usually considered to be rulers of the signs of the zodiac. I guess the idea I want to say is that Sirius is very connected with the little bear. I mean, do you suppose in a certain sense Sirius could be like a conduit for little bear energy? As I said, there's a connection between the two ajna petals and the two points in the solar plexus. But, looking at the signs of the zodiac, or the constellations, there are seven of them that are major, and maybe another one that we could bring into the picture. Would any one of these be considered sort of rulers of zodiacal constellations? I mean, we oftentimes say Mars is the ruler of Aries, but what about a sun which is particularly related to Aries? What about a sun which is particularly related to Taurus? This is another level of astrology which, okay, we can't know much about this, but we can begin to make certain correspondences. Alpha Centauri is said to have a lot to do with the sacral center. Could it in some way relate to Libra or to Scorpio? Yeah, in other words, what we'd have to do is, just the way we have a certain number of planets which relate to the signs of the zodiac, we have higher correspondences to those planets in the solar logoi of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one. So maybe there would be a kind of attraction between each one of these suns and one or more of the constellations of the zodiac. It's just a thought. They are of so high a nature that it's hard for me to believe that they involve only planetary stimulation, when, in order to reach a planet, they have to go through a sun. They have to go through our sun to reach one of our planets, but maybe there are planets in these other stellar systems as well, and then they would have to go through that sun first. I'm just trying to put in the missing pieces, if there are missing pieces. These three groups of solar bodies, and notice how interesting this is, because this is interesting. This reveals a blind. I'm going to, you know what happens here. It doesn't want to stay in red. But this reveals that a term like solar system can refer to a constellation. And that I made quite a point of earlier, in one of the earlier tapes. I can't tell you which one, but it wasn't too long ago from this one. So three groups of solar bodies, three constellations, a system of solar bodies, a solar system and let's call it this, a system of solar bodies, can refer to a constellation. The Great Bear Pleiades is in Sirius, are of paramount influence where the spiral cyclic activity of our system is concerned. Now, spiral cyclic activity usually relates to second ray motion. I've seen him talk about spiral cyclic in relation to the first ray, but usually spiral cyclic is connected with the first second ray motion, whereas progress onward or driving forward through space is connected with the first ray motion. So second ray motion is generally some sort of revolving, well, if rotation is the third ray motion, then revolution is the second ray motion, because that which is the center of rotation is moving also. So as it moves upward, the spiral, the apparent circular rotation will really be a spiral. So maybe we're talking about revolution of our system, our solar system, around, well, what points? One of the points of the Great Bear Dubai is called the pivot. Heaven's pivot seems to suggest something about rotation. Around the Pleiades, we are said to revolve every 250,000 years. And what is there any kind of relation between our sun and Sirius, any kind of rotational relation? I don't think that's been determined or even researched, but at least we say spiral cyclic activity, which suggests rotation. Just as in the human atom, the spiral activity is egoic and controlled by the egoic body, because we ever ascend, don't we? As we continue the apparently rotary motion of reincarnation, we also ascend constantly, if all is going well. At least there is a constant rising. One is drawn upward by the presence of the solar angel permeating the egoic body. Just as in the human atom, the spiral activity is egoic and controlled from the egoic body, so in connection with a solar system, these three groups are related to the logoic spiritual triad. Whoa. And I must say, I think in the order given, in other words, the Great Bear to Atma, the Pleiades to Buddhi, because it is the source of cosmic Buddhi, as we learn in Cosmic Fire 1162, and Sirius to the monastic level, because there is much of the cosmic mind, and Sirius is cosmically mentally polarized, as far as I can understand, whereas our sun is not yet. Just the way Venus has tranquilized its astral body and is probably, in a lower sense, cosmically mentally polarized, where we, our Earth Logos, has not tranquilized his astral body and is not yet, by any means, cosmically mentally polarized. You even wonder whether he is cosmically astrally polarized, because there's so much of the... he has not yet achieved the second cosmic initiation. And there's so much of an earthy, instinctual, material nature going on. And their influence is dominant in connection with solar incarnation, with solar evolution, and solar progress. Well, anyway, there is, he told us, an important quaternary here. Earlier in the book, he told us. So we have an important quaternary with our solar system being the recipient of the triangle above. Now, what's interesting, Atma, the head center, and I'll make sure that we don't have to worry about that, the head center is connected with Atma, and so is the Great Bear. The heart center is connected with the Pleiades. In this case, when they when they distribute cosmic booty. But there are other correspondences. From another perspective, the throat center is connected with intelligence and thus with the Pleiades. And Sirius with the heart center. However, there's always this funny interchange going on between rays 2 and ray 3. Is Sirius strictly the cosmic Christ, or does it have a great deal of Manas, because it confers Manas upon our solar logos? Are the Pleiades strictly monastic and intelligent, conferring Manas upon the planetary logo, or do they have a very strong cosmic Buddhic connection? As a matter of fact, they are stimulators of the love nature of the solar angels. There is a reference to that. And if we go through the cosmic fire, the end of cosmic fire, as I hope to do, then we would run into that reference. Well, having the typical energies of a patience of an Aries person, I did look it up, or at least this is one of the important references. There's force from the Pleiades via the solar angel or ego. So there is definite connection with these hearts of fiery love, and I'll just bet that the Pleiades carry this kind of Buddhic energy to the solar angels. And interestingly enough, the dragon seems to be, Draco seems to be even more powerful and the source of Buddhic energy to the Pleiades. Now that brings us directly to the idea that these great constellational lords have more than one ray. And if there is cosmic kundalini connected in the base of the spine center, possibly cosmic kundalini with the dragon, notice how as the seventh ray comes in, more and more about dragons appears in literature and the movies. Then the seventh ray is going to be there with the dragon. It's a pretty clear association, but also the second ray of a very cosmic kind of Buddhi. So the interrelationships in this vast science of relation are staggering for us. Let's see if there's anything else here. There's all kinds of interesting things in these references. But I think that's the one that I was looking for, the connection to the solar angels. And we know what the purpose of the solar angels is. This is on Cosmic Fire 1157, so it might be worth just going there. I realize I'm taking a very, you know, kind of synthetic approach at this moment. And you may wonder, well, is this really astrology? But it does become cosmology by the time you get into the kind of collections we have at the end of the appendix. So the seven centers with which man is concerned, okay, these energies are transmitted, transmitters of energy from many and varied sources, from the seven rays via the seven sub-rays of any specific monadic ray. Huh, notice that. Seven sub-rays of any specific monadic ray. I've already said there's a three and a seven involved in this monadic picture. Three major, and each one of them having the possibility of seven monadic rays. From the triple aspects of the planetary logos, as he manifests through a scheme. From what are called the sevenfold divisions of the logoic heart, or the sun in its sevenfold essential nature, as it is seen lying esoterically behind the outer physical sun. From the rishis of the Great Bear, this pours in via the monad and is transmitted downward, merging on the higher levels of the mental plane, with seven streams of energy from the Pleiades which come in as the psychical force. demonstrating through the solar angel, right? So here's definitely the true psychic is found on the second ray, and here is a definite connection of that psychic energy with the Pleiades, isn't it? So all these various energies are passed through certain groups or centers, becoming more active and demonstrating with a freer flow as the course of evolution is pursued. As far as man is concerned at present, the energy all converges and seeks to energize his physical body and direct his actions via the seven etheric centers. The centers receive the energy in a threefold manner from the heavenly man and therefore from the rishis of the Great Bear via the monad. So that's an interesting triangle. One of the stars of the Great Bear, let's see, is Heavenly Man, therefore from the Rishis. Okay, and the centers are always the last, probably the head and the base of the spine, but we have the Great Bear star, the monad, and the head center, maybe base of the spine, from the Pleiades via the solar angel. So there's a definite second ray aspect to the Pleiades, no question about that. I think it would be quite daunting, wouldn't it, to take up the last part of this book, including the seven cosmic paths, which are spoken of as well in a greater extension in the rays and the initiations. Well, anyway, all this lies in the future, and hopefully we can begin, you know, to think somewhat about these things. Okay. Esoteric astrology, there it is. Okay. Now, going on, let's see what else lies ahead. We may have even conquered a page. 642, and it's about the planets. Well, we've been dealing with the signs of the zodiac, constellations of the zodiac, the lords of constellations, regent of the constellation, and lords and regents of planets. It's all a hierarchy, ever ascending unto the one. And that one, as I say, is as far removed from the infinity of infinities as it can possibly be. I always spin off into the third ray here, but every definite quantity or definite entity is an ultimate negligibility, and they're all equal. You know, in one sense, all definite quantities are equal. They are ever less than the smallest named quantity. That is, in comparison with the absolute, which in a way is incomparable. Well, you know, let's just hope that there are so many paradoxes that it can break the mind free of its present limitations. Maybe. Well, it'll come. It'll have to come. It has to come. There are seven chief planets. The spheres of the indwelling seven spirits before the throne, right? And we're talking about the sacred planets. Oops, sacrifice petals. Sacred planets has a funny little abbreviation. That's it. Sac. Right. There are seven chief planets. The spheres of the indwelling seven spirits. These seven spirits are the seven chief groups of Dianchoans. There's a tremendous hint in this. Because Dian, well, each in its own way is a Dianchoan, in a way, a master of meditation. But the solar angels, which together become a planetary logos, are called also Dianchoans. So there are seven chief groups of these solar angels, amalgamated solar angels. Seven chief groups of these amalgamated solar angels. If I were to go to a particular place here, solar angels, can I find it here? Groups, Logoi. Let's see what happens. Not that one. And maybe not that one. But the place for me to find that would be here in AAB Extracts. And I'll just do one quick search. In Solar Angels, in seven groups, Solar Angels, Buddhic Force, Solar Angels with the Buddhic Force, and here it is. They're called Solar Petris. The Petris who form the egoic body of the human being do not, alone and isolated, form planetary Logoi, the 49 groups of solar fires concerned in the great work are those spoken of, and they become the 49 planetary Logoi in connection with seven planetary systems. And you realize what this indicates is that in these different planets connected with the seven solar systems, or different stars, rather, connected with the solar system, there are planets. This is really occult, very, very deep. But anyway, this is what we're talking about, groups of solar fires. These are the Daihan Shohans that we're speaking of. And I always have to find my astrology. I have so many things open here that, all right. So here, let's put this down and 49 groups of solar angels concerned in the great work are those spoken of, and they become the 49 planetary Logoi. Okay, the seven, so we're talking about planetary Logoi right now, and the seven chief groups of Daihan Chohans. In a way, what this means is that our planetary Logos, and every other planetary Logos, has been formed of a collection of solar angels. Our planetary Logos and all other planetary Logoi are formed of amalgamations of solar angels. Or at least maybe they are a regathering. Because in a way the planetary Logos has already emanated from a superior source, and the solar angel is in an inferior source. So here is where we have to deal with emanation theory and the degree to which an emanated factor remains on its own level and then emanates further rays, so to speak, to descend to lower levels. Well, it is, I just begin to sense that it's a really dense subject, or at least maybe impenetrable to us. We'll just have to take DK's word here that there are 49 groups of solar fires and seven per solar system, and there are chief ones. So these sacred planets are composed of the chief ones of the groups of Daihan Shohans. And I suppose that a planet like ours is composed of those Daihan Chohans which are not chief. In other words, that somehow the solar angelic aggregation for Venus or for Jupiter or for Saturn is of a higher order. It's a higher order group than the solar angelic aggregation which has produced the Logos, apparently, in respect to our planet. So let's say that the solar and aggregation of for Venus is of a higher order than the solar angelic aggregation for Earth. By this I mean, it's not necessarily that the present solar angels that have come to Venus are higher in nature than those who have come to Earth. Indeed, they probably are, but I'm saying that out of the solar logos is breathed forth these streams of solar angels who unite and in essence become a group being. And the question in emanation theory is this a new group being, or is it in a sense the vehicle of a group being that already exists on a higher level, then using the aggregated solar angels as the vehicle? Well, that's one I don't think I can solve. I can barely articulate the difference. There is just a problem in emanation theory about how the lesser units rise along their lines of emanation. So if they've all split off from, say, some sort of planetary logos or a solar logos, do they re-aggregate in such a way as to re-become the being from which they have split off or from which they have emanated? Well, you know, one gets into abstract thoughts here, or at least thoughts that are not connected with everyday sensory reality, but of course the analogy can be drawn from our everyday sensory reality. Suffice it to say, we do have this amazing statement by DK about the 49 groups. Yes, the 49 groups. And that's in Cosmic Fire 879. So it's not like, and what's important here is that a human being becomes a solar angel, maybe, and that solar angel, which is a multi-part solar angel, doesn't just go along a certain path and become a planetary logos or a solar logos. Reaggregation is needed. The reaggregation of the solar angels is needed in the retraction of emanations which have come from higher sources. I know I'm being a little vague there, but I just want to point out the necessity of studying the principle of reaggregation. How emanations recombine. Now maybe some of the recombining goes on even on the level of men when they enter an ashram and, you know, realize themselves again as part of maybe seven great monadic groupings and so forth. But it seems to be the solar angels, that men can still become solar angels, one-to-one, looks like. Don't know yet, but looks like one human being develop into one solar angel. But can a solar angel go beyond being a solar angel? The next step is really some sort of globe lord or chain lord, or for those solar angels. I mean, there are a number of different paths a solar angel can take, I suppose. But one of the paths is the path of the planetary logo, and there are several steps, globe lords, chain lords, finally planetary lords. So just because you step on a path doesn't mean that that path doesn't have parts to it, and you don't have to go up through the ranks. I think you do have to go up through the ranks. So if our planetary logoi are part of the sun, solar logos, and if the solar angels are part of the sun, they may also be part of the part in the sun that is the planetary logos. So when they become planetary logoi, do they become new planetary logoi, or do they re-become the planetary logos from which they emanated within a certain solar logos or star? There, I think I've expressed that a little better. But still, there are the veils. But in the interest of making this kind of material available to more people, I'd rather not linger or languish on a particular difficult, insoluble question forever, but to move on. These are the seven primeval rays coming through the planetary logoi. Now, the question is, does the planetary logos have a ray, or does it transmit a ray? In other words, does Dragon of Wisdom, nice to show up, does a planetary logos emit a ray or transmit a ray? That's not really easy to answer. It's a bit like asking a human being, well, look, you've got a, are you emitting a ray or transmitting a ray? In other words, is a ray such an inherent part of you that it is an emission through radiation? Or is there, are you simply transmitting something that originated somewhere else? And maybe both are true in a way. So, you know, the seven primeval rays, as far as intrasystemic matters go, but every one of the seven solar systems, of which ours is one, also have a particular ray. And let's say at the present moment, our solar logos has a second ray. And Sirius 2 has a second ray, but in the context, and a fifth ray, but in the context of these seven solar systems, does it, what center does it represent? Is Vega involved, really? Nicholas and I have been thinking about that. Is Vega involved? And if Vega is involved, what center is involved with Vega? It's a more powerful star, actually, than Sirius, as far as, I think, something like 40 solar luminosities, rather than the 26 some, or maybe some people say 33 of Sirius. Human knowledge about these things is really fallible, and we can say, you know, with apparent scientific authority that the solar luminosity of this star is thus and so. How many solar luminosities does it have? But then some other investigator comes along and changes the whole picture. There are only seven planets specially connected with the Earth. I think we've gone over this one before. And 12 houses. But the possible combinations of their aspects are countless. Each planet can stand to each of the other in 12 different aspects. And that I may not have discussed. And it is only partially true. Because in the study of harmonics in astrology, there are aspects going up to the 179th harmonic. In other words, any kind of relationship has its mathematical significance. You know, from one point of view, we could maybe number what is meant, you know, the conjunction. Well, 12 different aspects. Okay, I see what they're driving at. The conjunction, the opposition divided by 2, the trine divided by 3, the square divided by 4, the quintile divided by 5, the sextile divided by 6, the septile divided by 7, the semi-square divided by 8, the novile of 40 degrees divided by 9, the decile of 36 degrees divided by 10, the undecile, some 33 degrees divided by 11, and the semi-sextile divided by 12. Okay, but the sort of a fifth-ray, third-ray researching astrologers say, okay, now divide by 13, now divide by 14, and you'll find a relationship to a septile. Now divide by 15. When you have prime numbers, you won't find a connection. Divide by 16, you know, there will be a relationship to some of the earlier aspects. Divide by 17, no relationship. Divide by 18, relationships to the novile. Divide by 19, prime number. No other relationships. Divide by 20, well, it'll relate to the decile of, you know, divided by 10. And the decile will relate to the quintile, which is division by 5, but that's a prime number, and that's as far as it can go. And then 21, 22, 23, prime number. 24, no. It'll certainly relate to the sort of to a 15-degree aspect, sort of to half a semi-sextile. 24, no. 25, no. But, you know, it will have its relation. It's not prime. 26 is not prime. It's divisible by 13. 13 is prime. 27, not prime, but important. It'll relate again to the novile. And the novile will relate to the, well, there's binoviles, and a binovile is 80 degrees, trinovile is a trine, 3 times 40. See how it goes. You can get into harmonic divisions, and there will be unsuspected aspects. So normally we just stop it and say, okay, each planet can stand to each of the other 12 in 12 different aspects, and that gives a huge potential for different types of interaction. Only 7 planets specially connected to the Earth. Now, I wonder what is meant by that, because is that a special relation to the Earth, and which are those 7? In my view, well, the word specially is what's important. But let's just say that the 7 eventual sacred planets all form a group. The 12 planets, 2 veiled, 1 hidden, still form a group. And in a group, each member knows the other, especially in a group of this nature. Well, but there's still among these 12 probably those that are especially connected with the Earth. Venus would be one, Mars would be another, Pluto would be another. It's said to be making its esoteric approach to the Earth. Uranus has the same monadic ray. Jupiter has the same soul ray. Saturn has a very strong connection, because Saturn is the mental body of that great third ray entity in which the Earth is a physical body. Neptune, I don't know what kind of relationship it might have. I mean, they all are related, for sure. Mercury has a very definite connection. And we don't know about those veiled planets. We're not exactly sure here what Blavatsky is saying. And, of course, she's writing at a time before the discovery of Pluto, which is making its esoteric approach to the Earth. All right. The names of the planets are applied in the same order everywhere and always. We went over those. We talked about, Sunday, Sunday, Sun, Moonday, Lundi, the moon, and related also to Uranus, and Mardi, Mars. And so everywhere there is this progression of the days. Our days are divided into 7. And there's always a little bit left over, right? Because you divide that into 365 and you get 5 and 52 weeks in the year, with a little left over. There's going to be 7 goes into 3, 6, 5 times, and then 12, and then 7 goes in 1 time with, it's almost 52. Well, you know, when in doubt, this is what you do. You say we have 365 days, and we're going to divide by 7, and that's going to equal 52.14, not very much left over. Is that so? A little bit more. 52 times. Oh, that's interesting. 365. 36, so we have 5 times and then 12. But I'm surprised at that. What's wrong? Is that just so late in the day and have I been doing too much? So let's see what 7 times 52 is, okay? We should be able to do that. 7 times 52 is 364. Okay, I get it. So 365 has that much left over, about maybe 1/7. Anyway, this septenate of, now who knows whether, is Sunday the right Sunday? You know, according to the calendar, is Sunday, as we call it, really, in the, with all accuracy, the day on which the sun power is paramount. In other words, is our calendrical Sunday the real Sunday? It's just like, I wonder how calendrical. Well, no, I guess I'll just have to leave it that. Is it calendar, calendra, cal? No. We'll leave it that way. I'm not sure what the proper spelling is here, and I'm not going to get much help because it's an obscure... oh, it's good. Calendric. We're good. Calendrical. All right. That's good. So is our calendrical Sunday the real Sunday? And it's like just like asking, is our A440 to which pitch many orchestras tune the real A? And is the Sunday we call Sunday the real Sunday? Did it start in a way that's really lined up, or are thought forms? Okay. Are thought forms so powerful that they can shape the relationship between the day we name Sunday and the power of the sun? And so it goes. But still, I'm not entirely assured that our calendrical Sunday is the day on which the sun has greatest power. Apparently, every 7 days, one of the planets has great power. Most people look at this as simply a calendrical convenience, but occultism is going to tell us that that the people who are born on these days really do have that particular quality of energy. I quoted before, you know, Wednesday's child is full of woe, Thursday's child has far to go, Friday's child is loving and giving, Saturday's child works hard for a living. There does seem to be some kind of psychological influence in relation to those days, if they were properly lined up with the planetary source. But that would be problematic, and I'm sure there's a lot of arbitrariness in the formation of a calendar. Well, this is far enough for me to go, and I'll say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 151A, page... We're not really making a whole lot of progress on pages here, because the material is so, you know, so interesting. Looks like page 642. What are we going to do? Just have one program per page? And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 151B, page 642.